we go, guys. Parshas Mishpatim. This is how it starts off. Parchov Gimel Pasuk Chavchat says, Pasuk says, V'shalachti es atzira lefanecha. I will send the hornet in front of you. V'gersha sachivim es akanani v'sachivim lefanecha. And it will get rid of the chivi, the kanani, and the chiti from in front of you. Now here's the deal. Parshas Mishpatim goes through all the different laws. So the laws that Moshe can learn at Har Sinai, all the random different halachos and all the different things that he said. Toward the end of the parsha, Kadosh Baruch Hu tells Bnei Yisrael, I'm sending a malach in front of you. That malach is going to be going out doing all the things that you need to do. Anything that happens will be done through this malach, and everything's all good. HaKadosh Baruch Hu then asks Moshe Rabbeinu for a shus for the malach to go instead, and Moshe Rabbeinu actually says no. He says, I don't want this malach. I don't want the malach anywhere near me. I want to do it by myself. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu instead sent in a tzira, a hornet. He sent in the tzira levenecha v'gersha, and it got rid of, now listen to these nations, the chivi, the kenani, and the chiti. We're missing the Amori, the Prizi, the Yavusi, and the Girgashi. There are seven nations in Eretz Yisrael. It only mentions these three that the Tzira had any effect on. Okay, number one, what did the Tzira do? Number two, why does it only mention these three? So the Tzira, Rashi says, Min Sharta Ope, it's a type of bird, bug, whatever you want to call it. Haisamako, somebody named it, hit them in their eyes. Umatila Ban Eretz, it put poison into their eyes. They maced them, and the people would die from that poison going to their eyes. The wording of the Medrash Tanchum is a little bit more extreme. It said it was misbakeya, that once the poison went to their eyes popped out, and then they would die. It's a little bit more extreme. But you didn't have to go, then Rashi didn't have to gross anybody out. That Tzira lo avrath the Yarden, that Tzira never crossed over the Yarden. It stayed with Bnei Yisrael on the east side of the Jordan River. It stayed in Chutz Laaretz. It never went to Eretz Yisrael. The Chiti v'Kanani, the very next Rashi. So what's Chiti and Kanani? Says Rashi, Himaret Sichon v'Og. The land of Sichon and Og, which is on the other side of the Yarden, was Chiti and Kenani. Levika Mikol Zayin Huos Lo Manakan El Elu. Therefore, of all the seven nations, it only mentions these two, these nations here, before the Maragim, before anything happened. The Chivi, Apophishom Eber Yarden Mahola, even though the Chivi lived in Eretz Yisrael, Shan Rabbeinu Sotah Shall Spasa Yarden Amda Vizorka Ben Mara. The hornets stood on the banks of the river and spat their poison across the river at those nations and destroyed them while they were in Eretz Yisrael. But the hornets themselves never went inside Eretz Yisrael. You can have quite a few questions on these Rashis. You can have quite a few questions. Like, what's going on with the poison, and what's going on with it spitting, and what's going on with just the hornets, and why Dafka these three nations? If it could spit at some of them that were inside Eretz Yisrael, why couldn't it spit at everybody that lived in Eretz Yisrael and got rid of all the nations, everything would have been okay? Also, if Sichon and Og were known as the land of Canaan, then what was Eretz Canaan? I mean, Eretz Canaan should have been named because of the Canaanim that lived there. But we're calling Eretz Canaan the land outside of Eretz Yisrael where Sichon and Og lived. That's another strange thing altogether. What are we doing with all that? So here we go. This is all a quote from a Gemara in Sota Lamin Dov of an Aleph. If Eretz Canaan is the land of the Canaanim, because the Canaanim lived there, we're saying right now that the Canaanim lived on the other side of the Jordan River, that the Tzira hit the Canaani, who was the land of Sichon and Og. That was the land of Sichon and Og on the other side of the Jordan River. That's not Eretz Canaan, that's Jordan. That has nothing to do with Eretz Canaan. So why is that? Why is that where the pasuk is saying that's where the Canaanim lived? Here we go. There's a Gemara Lamed Vav Amid Aleph that says it's a machlokes Reish Lakish and Rapapa. Reish Lakish says that the Tzira blinded the people and then castrated the people. It went and castrated them as well and took care of that area down underneath. The Chofetz Chaim and the Tzaret Yonatan.
Where is this?
Just a Gemara.
No, and where is
Sota Lamed Vav Amid Aleph? That's a quote from Reish Lakish. Chofetz Chaim and Tzaret Yonatan, Rabbi Yonatan, I should both say it was Mida Kineged Mida. The Canaanim were from Canaan. Originally from Canaan. What did Canaan do? What did Canaan do wrong? Canaan, originally, when he saw Noah in the tent, drunk from the grapes that he had drunk, it wasn't Chalm, it was Canaan that saw the Erva of his father. He saw the Erva of his father. Look in the Pasuk. When Canaan saw the Erva of his father, just check the Pasukim next time, you'll be fine.
He had three kids.
When Canaan saw the Erva of his father and saw what was going on, he did not tell... Did you guys not know the Pasuk?
No, it's not in there. What are you talking?
Guys. We're going to... Back to second grade, guys. At the very end of the Mabul, it says, at the very, very end of the Mabul, it says, the Eilat Olus B'nei Noach, it says the following. Okay, let's find it over here. You have to look in the Yefes. Here we go. It says, Vayesh mina yayin, vayishkor, vayisgal besochalo. He got drunk and he was wallowing around in his tent. And then it says the pasuk, Vayar chom avi kenan, es erbas aviv. And Rashi says, why is it called avi kenan? Because it says, Yesh mabusin roamin kenan ro, vehigid lo aviv, lakachuzgal adover vinisgalel. Kenan was cursed for seeing the matter. He saw it. He saw that Chum was naked, and therefore had to be punished for the fact that he saw some nakedness of his grandfather of Noah.
It says that
and then again,
was there.
That was Kenan himself.
Kenan
who saw it. Who saw it?
And told
second part is that he allowed Chum to come around and did not go for the... He allowed Chum to come and either do something horrible to his father, either castrate his father, or sodomize his father. He did something absolutely horrible to him. Mida kinegan mida, says the Chofetz Chaim, the Rav Yonah and Eibshitz, that came these hornets, according to Reish Lakish, and they came around, and because he saw the nakedness and didn't do anything, so it blinded Canaan. It blinded all the people of Canaan. And because they didn't do anything about the arias that happened afterward, it castrated the people of Canaan. It took care of that area of the body as well. Chofetz Chaim points out, do you see how long it took for this onish to be completed? Do you see how many years it's been since Kanan saw this, and yet it still affected his kids? Do you see the effect that a parent can have on his kids or grandkids? Just on one little thing that he did, it just wasn't little, but on one thing that he does, it can affect your grandkids to the point where your grandkids can have this happen to them, where a hornet can come after them, just because of that. HaKadosh Baruch Hu never forgets anything, but that's number one, that's where he's sluggish. Where Papa argues, he says there were two tziras. There was a tzira, there was a hornet of Moshe Rabbeinu, and there was a tzira of Yoshua. Rashi held like Reish Lakish, that there was only one tzira and it stayed outside of Eretz Yisrael. Because according to Rapapa, how come all seven nations weren't killed by the hornets? How come all seven nations weren't destroyed? Here we have only three nations mentioned by the Pasuk. The Chivi, the Chiti, and the Kanani were killed by the hornets. But why not all seven? If you have two hornets, one outside of Eretz Yisrael, one inside Eretz Yisrael, everybody should have been killed. But that didn't happen. So Rashi said Reish Lakish makes more sense because it only mentions these three nations. But here's a problem. The Marsha asks, the Chiti lives in Eretz Yisrael. There's two rayas for that in the Torah. Do you have any idea where? Two rayas that the Chitim definitely lived in Eretz Yisrael. They're also known as Chais. The B'nai Chais. Oh, Ma'aretz Machpelah. Ma'aretz Machpelah was bought by Avraham Avinu from the B'nai Chais. That's clearly near Hebron. That was in Eretz Yisrael. The Chitim didn't live outside Eretz Yisrael. They lived inside Eretz Yisrael. Seventh of that Canaan should have been inside Eretz Yisrael. Number two, there's another problem. There's another thing that we know. Rivka Yimenu said, "Katzti b'chayai mipnei benos Chais. I despise my life because of the daughters of Chais, who Esav married, who lived around the area of Rivka and Yitzchak. Rivka and Yitzchak never left Eretz Yisrael. If they never left Eretz Yisrael, it must be that Chais lives where? In Eretz Yisrael. So two rayas, says the Marsha. So the Marsha says there's a mistake here. And really Rashi means to say the Chivi outside of Eretz Yisrael. And the Be'er Basad says it unbelievable. He says the Chivi from a Medrash lives by Og. They were the people of Og, and that's who the Chivi were. And Sichon, when he comes to fight Klal Yisrael for the first time, is known as the Kenani. So the Kenani is really referring to Sichon. And the Chivi is really referring to Og. You wonder how they won a battle against Sichon and Og, who are massive giants. We only have that little Medrash. What does the Medrash say about Og? He lifted up the mountain, and these ants came and ate through the mountain, and it fell down on top of his head. The ants were a form of this tzira. If you look up the Aruch as to what a tzira is, it is a flying ant. A flying ant. And the pshat is those ants that ate through the rock, the termites, so to speak, they ate the rock, were flying termites. They were tziras that defeated Og. It's the exact same thing that happened to Sichon. It's the exact same thing that happened to Sichon's son and Og's son, who are supposed to be known as these huge guys. The giants that lived outside, how were they able to defeat them? The Jews didn't have any weapons. They had nothing on them. Hamushim, it could be weapons. But they didn't have anything. How were they able to defeat Sichon and Og, these huge giants in all this land? You know why? Because they had the tzira. These hornets were going around, these flying ants, these poisonous whatever it was, were going around taking care of all the people around there. And thus, says the Be'er Basad, and says the Marsha, switch it around. Rashi, there was a mistake made in Rashi. And one of the woman editors that went ahead and edited this Rashi put in, instead of the word Chiti and Kanani, should have been Chivi and Kanani are outside of Eretz Yisrael, and the Chiti are inside Eretz Yisrael. They live near the border of the Jordan River, and they were able to spit and hit the Chitim that lived on the border of Eretz Yisrael. Now it makes sense in the Pasuk. Because the way it says in the Pasuk is, they will get rid of the Chivi then the Kanani, and then the Chiti that are inside, because the Chiti and the Kanani are outside Eretz Yisrael, and then the Chiti, which is inside Eretz Yisrael. But the way Rashi says it, it should be the opposite. The Chiti and the Kanani, and then the Chiti. That's what it should have been. So now it makes a lot of sense in the order. Okay, Maral Diskin has a whole piece in this as well. What happens with Jordan? What happens with everything else like that? But I'm telling you, this Brachos, the Gemara that deals with Og and Brachos Nundal on the Bez and says that it was taken care of by those Nemoan, by those ants. It was flying termites. It destroyed them. That was the Tzira. So you have an actual, if somebody points out to you, where did the Tzira ever come in? You could be like, oh yeah, Og. How do you die? Flying termites. I got you. And that's it. You can just say it to them. You're done. You don't have to worry about anything else. But here's a question. The obvious question. If Yoshua had flying termites with them, things that could destroy Og and Sichon, and they were spitting poison into people's eyes and blinding them, and then castrating them to boot, I mean, what in the world are you fighting for? Why would they need anything else to fight in Eretz Yisrael? Why wouldn't Yoshua beg, please, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, let them spit all over Eretz Yisrael? Get rid of all the seven nations.
How did the Meraglim ever happen?
That's a great question. That's a great question also. The Meraglim is also a big deal. How in the world did they go, why would the Meraglim ever happen if they had this Tzira that was all around them? You should know. I have an easy answer for the Meraglim. Because all the people were dying while the Meraglim were going in. And that's why they came out and they said, the land is eating up all its inhabitants. Why was it eating up all their inhabitants? Because the hornets were going in front of the Meraglim killing people. And they didn't think that way. They didn't see the actual hornets killing. They just thought, well, these people are dying. And the land is Ochel Yoshua. Anybody who lives here is going to die. But in actuality, in reality, it was the Tzira. It was the hornets that were going out and killing everybody for them. And they were taken care of. The Meraglim had an agenda. And when you have an agenda, you don't listen to the obvious. So yes, the obvious.
Why couldn't the Tzira didn't go into Eretz Yisrael?
Ah, but that was only at the very end. It could have been that they went in when the Meraglim were there, because the Meraglim were able to go inside. But they were able to... We'll explain. We have to explain where the Tzira came from. And it definitely was bad. Yes. There we go, and that's going to be that's where we're going to lead to right now.
What about Amalek?
What?
Why didn't they?
Hold on, Amalek is a different issue altogether. If you come to my shir at NCSY Yarchikala, then you'll know the entire thing about Amalek and figure out why. If not, then I can't help you right now. I will. I believe after this year, I'll try to explain what Amalek is. Here's the Eon Yaakov. The Eon Yaakov and the Ein Yaakov asked them this Gemara: why would Yoshua be fighting for 7 years? He fought the people of Canaan for 7 years if he had a possibility of getting this Tzira. What was he doing? So Rish Lakish holds Bnei Yisrael had a choice. Here's the idea, says Ian Yaakov. Do you want to have a Malach? Do you want an angel with you taking care of everything you do? Or do you want the hornet? The hornet is directly a Kaddish Baruch, it's a Makkah from God, like God doing something. But if you don't want God doing something directly, you want it indirect, you want to be more involved, then you have to choose a Malach instead. Now, Moshe Rabbeinu did not want a Malach. He felt that the Bnei Yisrael were more deserving. They were more deserving to have the hornet, to have this crazy thing go out in front of them and they'd do everything and not have the why. What do we need a war for? What do we need a war? Just have the Tzira go out in front of us, destroy everything, and everything's all good. HaKadosh Baruch Hu just puts out his finger. He sends out a Makkah. He'll send out completely destruction. Now, Moshe Rabbeinu's times, they were on the level that all you needed to do was have a hornet or a bee or an ant go out and destroy everything for them, and they didn't have to lay up, they didn't have to move a finger. Moshe Rabbeinu would just say, like, it's okay, guys. He'd lift up his arms, and immediately the hornets would start flying in, and the Makos would come, and everything would be destroyed. But by Yoshua saw that the people were being lazy. The people were really lazy. And Yeshua knew that they had to work in order to get Eretz Yisrael, because otherwise, how were they going to be deserving of living in Eretz Yisrael? They were going to be destroyed. By Yeshua, they were unbelievably lazy, so he asked the Malach to stay with them. That's in Perek Hay. When he goes and he sees the Malach for the very first time in Yeshua, he sees the Malach, he says, Halanu ata, are you with us, or are you against us? What are you here for? Are you going to be with us, and you're going to fight with us, or are you not going to fight with us? And the Malach, whose name was Michael, stood there and said, I am with you if you want me to be with you. But if I'm with you, said the Malach, then say goodbye to the hornets. This is before the first war, before the war in Jericho. Before the war in Jericho, the Malach said, you want me with you? Then everything will be all good, but you can't get the hornets anymore. How does a Malach fight? Person goes into war. Remember, the Malach has no time. He has nothing to do with time. He is beyond time. When you go out to war and you have a Malach with you, you have to swing the sword. But the Malach makes sure that you hit home. that he hit in the right place. That even if you're an inexperienced warrior, he makes sure the angel is right there. You've seen angels in the outfield. It's based on a true story. That's what I've heard. That he goes out, the Malach takes the arm and smacks the guy right in the spot where it's supposed to be. Exactly where you're supposed to be. Puts them right there like that. I've never used a sword before. Thank you. Thank you.
Not like that.
No, that does help. No, well, just in case. Even if you're going like that, that's the point. That was exactly my point. Even if you're going like that, the Malach does it exactly. But by hornets, you don't need to do anything. It's just a boom. And the hornet kills them. That's all you got to do. Said Yeshua, it's better if we do something. It's better if we show in action, if we do something itself, so that we get more schar for it. As you said, Aaron, the idea behind it is to be able to go out and to win these wars and to fight these wars and for Bnei Yisrael to think, wow, we're awesome. We can really do this. For Yeshua to make the people think that they were doing it themselves when really a Malach was with them the entire time. And that's how not a single person died in any of the wars that Yeshua fought except for one war because somebody had taken some of the cherem. And that was one person, Yair ben Menashe, who was, granted, he was 200 years old. So he was old. So he might, you know, he's old. I mean, that's fine. But Yair ben Menashe was the only person that died during these wars, during this army, and that's it. So Yeshua wanted these Shabbos. I'm going to tell you a medrash from the Otzar on Midrashim. Why do we have spheres in this world? Why do we have hornets? Like, what's the point of having a hornet in this world? What's the point of them? So this question was asked by Nebuchadnezzar to Ben Sira. Ben Sira was the son of Yirmiah. He wrote a sefer that never made it into 24 Sfarim that we have, but it's a sefer that they used to have. It's like a book of poetry, so to speak, but it's all about, it's like Mishle, it's like Shir HaShirim. It would have made it into Ksuvim, but it never made it there. It's Ben Sira, son of Yirmiah. Nebuchadnezzar asked him this question: why is there such a thing as a hornet? What's the point of a hornet in this world? What's the point? Because a bee, okay, I can hear a bee, like maybe for transferring honey, but a hornet, a wasp, what's the point of such a thing in this world? So that was asked to Ben Sira. Ben Sira said, David HaMelech saw a shoteh, he saw a fool chasing away a hornet. And David HaMelech asked this question to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, tell me, what is the point of a hornet in this world? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him, you're going to need it yourself. You will need this hornet. The time will come where you will be begging, you will be begging me. You want this hornet. So what happened? When he stole the flask of water from Shaul, Shaul was chasing after David HaMelech, looking for David HaMelech. So David HaMelech was in a certain cave.
Spider.
And Shaul, that's with the spider. Shaul was down in the camp, and everyone in the camp fell asleep. It was fiesta time. So everybody's fiesta time, I'm sorry. No F in there. They all fell asleep. Stop. My Spanish isn't so good. So either way, they all fell asleep. Every single person there, including Avner ben Ner, the general of the army. And right after that was Shaul. David HaMelech went in by himself to go check them all out. He went in. And he was able to walk around Avner's legs. Around Avner, Avner had his legs up like this. He was able to walk around Avner's legs, got to Shaul, and took the flask of water from Shaul to prove to Shaul that he was there and he didn't kill him. So you should like me because I won't kill you. Shaul, I'm not out to kill you. That's what he wanted to do, to prove to Shaul that he's a good guy. As he was trying to walk out, Avner ben Ner spread out his legs. When he spread out his legs, he was so huge, Avner ben Ner, so big, David HaMelech could not walk over the legs, nor could he go around the legs without hitting Avner ben Ner, possibly waking him up. And he didn't want to upset Avner, he didn't want to do anything. So what did HaKadosh Baruch Hu do? He sent in a hornet. And a hornet came and stung the leg of Avner ben Ner. He immediately had a jerk reaction where he lifted it up, and David HaMelech ran by and was able to get out. And that's when he said to Shaul, I have your flask. Look, I could have done something, but I took your flask from you, and look, I didn't kill you. The Medrash is pashut to understand. When a Kaddish Baruch Hu wants to clear a path, he sends a hornet, or a wasp, or a very, very hard to get bee, like a killer bee. What's pshat? If a Kaddish Baruch Hu knows that I'm going into a 7-Eleven, right? And he doesn't want there to be a certain person there who might be dressed as if it's in the middle of the summer. So he wants me to stay away from that area or not see that person who's inside there. Then what will happen? Kaddish Baruch Hu will send a hornet or a wasp and make sure that that person is scared enough to turn the corner so that when I walk in, I won't see that person.
Or send you away.
or sent me away, or not have that desire for a Slurpee. Right, that could be. It's just very unlikely. I'm saying this is what the more likely thing is supposed to be. If someone is supposed to walk and go do something, or there's a juice for Jay Fool who's standing outside, and you just don't want to waste your time with this type of a fool. You just don't want to waste your time with him. He's an idiot. What do I have to talk to this guy for? And Coach Buffalo just wants to get rid of him. What will he do? He'll send a wasp. He'll send a hornet and get rid of him. Because everybody's scared of these things. A wasp or a hornet, you're scared out of your mind. These things that come around you that buzz in your ear, you get scared out of your mind, you run away. If a Coach Buffalo wants to clear the path for anyone, he'll send this hornet. He'll send this wasp. The killing, the castration, the blindness, that's a side benefit. That's another thing that they can do. That's another add-on benefit that we can do. But that's not the ichor. The ichor is to clear the path. That's what it's supposed to do. You got to get by. You move that little leg. The ichor is to clear that path. Let me tell you an unbelievable story that I read. It's a sefer called The Leinu L'Shabbat by Rabbi Zvi Zilberstein. He brings down a story. He says that three Talmidei Chachamim were traveling to Yerushalayim. On their way to Yerushalayim, they went into a cab. They got into a cab, and the cab driver was not from. He wasn't from. He was one of those guys. He probably had the little hand, the sardy hand inside his cab. But he wasn't wearing a kippah. He wasn't wearing a kippah, anything else. I'm sorry. Okay. Either way. He wasn't wearing a kippah. And immediately, so when they got in the cab, they got outside of Tel Aviv, they started to say Tfilas Adarach. The cab driver listened to the words of Tfilas Adarach. And after they finished and he said Amen, he said to them, what in the world do we have nowadays? What are we talking about when we say Chayos Ros Badarach? The wild animals of the road. He said, I'm in my cab. There's not any wild animals here. What, I'm afraid of a bear? It's going to come down into Highway 1? I mean, that's crazy. There's no Chayos Ros that are coming down to the highway. What am I worried about these wild animals? So they said, they looked at them and they said, listen, it refers to other drivers, crazy drivers. Those are the Chayos Ros, the wild animals, the other crazy drivers. But hey, you said, come on, there aren't that many women that drive in the Tel Aviv Highway, Tel Aviv Jerusalem I'm in the bashing mode because I can't do it over the weekend because there's too many girls that are going to be around, so I'm doing it now. I'm sorry. That's just why. It's just one of those things. So it's fine. No, it's okay. I'm trying. But regardless, so because of that, there's not so many. You can't say that that's the shot behind it. So come on. Well, what is it? So they didn't have an answer. They're like, I don't know. And the cab driver, like, you know, did a little, okay, whatever, right? As soon as they got to Shar HaGai, if anybody has been to in between Yerushalayim and Tel Aviv, it's somewhere near Ramat Beit Shemesh, Shar HaGai. They got to that interchange, the interchange right around there. This huge wasp entered inside the cab. And everybody's like scared out of their minds. It starts buzzing incessantly. And the people are like trying to swat it, but they don't want to touch it. They're like, you know, whatever. The cab driver's like, he's like going around. He's swerving one side of the road to the other. Finally pulls over to the side of the road. They all open up their doors. They run outside. And meanwhile, the wasp is sitting inside there. Finally goes out. And they go in. They like roll up their windows. They like turn on the air conditioning. They're like, they were unbelievably scared. And the three time when they come and turns to the cab driver and is like, Chayos Ros. Chayos Ros. Those are the wild animals that can come in the road. You want to clear a path? You want to get rid of something? You want to whatever? Anything. Chayos Ros can include those wasps and hornets. Those wasps and hornets have a point in this world. They have something that they're supposed to do. That's the idea behind it. So what is this tzira? Where did it come from? Why did Moshe Rabbeinu have a tzira? Why this hornet? What was it that all of a sudden it came about? And was it one? It seems like Vishalakti as Hatzira, the hornet. I mean, that's a great hornet. It seems like it was one. It doesn't say it was Tziros. It doesn't say like it was many hornets. It was one hornet. What was so great about this hornet? What was this hornet? So listen to this. There's a Gemara in Bava Kama, Kuf Yud Zayin Amud Beis. It says Rabbi Yochanan killed Rav Kana. Long story, don't want to get into it right now. Rabbi Yochanan ended up killing Rav Kana by mistake. After Rabbi Yochanan realized that it was a mistake that he had killed Rav Kana, so instead he said, you know what, I'm going to go visit him in his cavern. So he went to go. Kuf Yud Zayin Amud Beis. You can look it up. Very unbelievable story. It starts in Kuf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph. It's a long story. So Rabbi Yochanan decides, I'm going to go visit Rav Kana. He wanted to be Machayim Esim. He wanted to bring Rav Kana back to life. And in the end, he was successful. It was because Rav Kana said, I don't want to come back. But Rabbi Yochanan said, please, you have to. So he ended up coming back to life. I could kill you. You know, I can bring him back to life as well. But Rabbi Yochanan brought him back to life. At the very end, Rabbi Yochanan went to his cave, to Rav Kana's cave where he was buried. And he saw an achna. He saw a huge snake surrounding the huge ma'ara, the cave, and the tail of the snake was in its mouth. That happens again. There is a second place where that's mentioned. It's mentioned above Mitzia. Don't remember the daf offhand. Somewhere near Pei Dalet Amud Aleph, where it says, it's somewhere right around that area, where it mentions that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai's cave was surrounded by an achna, Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Shimon was allowed to go in, but Rabbi Yossi Bar Rabbi Elazar, the grandson of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, was not allowed to go in. That's why, in Miron, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai and Rabbi Elazar Bar Rabbi Shimon are buried in the same area, inside the same shul. Rabbi Yossi Bar Rabbi Elazar is buried up the mountain a little bit. He wasn't allowed in the cave of his father and his grandfather because he wasn't in the cave with them for 13 years. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, he had an achna around the cave. Says the Ben Ish Chai, what's Shapian in achna? Says the following. Tzaddikim need to have a Yetzirah in this world. Because they got to have Puravu, they got to have children, they have to eat and drink, especially on Shabbos. Tzaddikim, even Tzaddikim, need to have a Yetzirah. You got to have a Yetzirah. You can't live without a Yetzirah. The problem is, you have to control that Yetzirah. You have to be able to control it and to be able to use it for the right purposes. Because if you use it badly, what? That's a good call. A tzaddik. A tzaddik needs Yetzirah in this world. Says the Zohar, Elav, and I didn't look this up. Elav Yetzirah, if it wasn't for the Yetzirah, Chedvasa Deshmaitza Lohava. You wouldn't have fun when you're learning. Some people are like that anyway. But you wouldn't have fun when you're learning. If you're in the middle of learning, you'd have no fun. You need a Yetzirah. You need a Yetzirah in order to have fun. But it isn't used so much. And after Misa, when the person dies, it becomes a Shomer for his grave. And it hangs around the kever of that tzaddik afterward, and says the Ben Ish Chai, it's in the form of an achna, of a huge snake, because the Yetzirah is the satan, is the nachash, is the malach ha-maves, it's the nachash. So a huge snake comes and surrounds the cave, and it goes around the cave, and it doesn't allow anybody to go in to see the tzaddik who doesn't deserve it. That is their Yetzirah. Achna is the same gematria as ne'eman, as in trustworthy. The Yetzirah was trustworthy to them in their lifetimes. Over here, Moshe Rabbeinu was so great, he was able to create out of his being mevatel his Yetzirah, being kovish his Yetzirah. He no longer had a Yetzirah in his body. Moshe Rabbeinu had nothing there. Moshe Rabbeinu was able to destroy it and turn it into a tzira, into a hornet, even during his lifetime. It has poison just like a snake. I don't know why it wasn't a snake, a flying snake. Maybe the pshat is there is no such thing as a flying snake. Maybe there's a difference that after death, it's a snake that's on the ground because you're in the ground. During the lifetime, when Moshe Rabbeinu was in Shemayim, therefore it was a tzira that flew in the Shemayim. I don't know. I have absolutely no idea. But says the Ben Ish Chai, it was a tzira, it was a hornet that was created by his Yetzirah. It was the Yetzirah of Moshe Rabbeinu that went around. And thus, where did he get it from? From not allowing himself to do any of the lavin in the Torah. How many lavin are there in the Torah? Close says it's 365, gematria of zero, without the yod. Sadi, resh, hey, ayin. Ayin, hey, I'm sorry. Sadi, resh, ayin, hey. It's 365. So when Moshe Rabbeinu in his door was alive, they had the zero. But what happened when Moshe Rabbeinu died? And Yoshua went into Eretz Yisrael. The zero of Moshe Rabbeinu became an achna of Moshe Rabbeinu. And Moshe Rabbeinu could not allow the zero to go to Eretz Yisrael. Thus, the zero only stayed outside of Eretz Yisrael and spat in to allow them to go to the borders, took care of the people on the borders. But they couldn't go into Eretz Yisrael because Moshe Rabbeinu had died. Yoshua may have made one. That's Rapapa. Rapapa says Yoshua made one on his own, but it wasn't the same power as the tzira that Moshe Rabbeinu had. Moshe Rabbeinu had an unbelievably powerful one because he had the 365 lavin that he was able to take care of. But nobody else was able to come anywhere close to that. Yes, sir?
Another question is about Yoshua.
We're taking... Yeah. Yeah. So we took care of that. This week is also known as Parsha Shkalim. Parsha Shkalim. At the end of the Parsha, when you think everything's all done and you're all happy, it's a longish Parsha. All of a sudden, there's about 35 psukim from Parsha Shkalim. We go to the beginning of Kisisa. B'nei Yisrael gives a chatzi shekel. Not only one. They really give two chatzi shekels during the year. There are two trumos, two donations that they give of a chatzi shekel each that they give over to the Beis HaMikdash. We read that toward the end of the Parsha, after the Parsha's already done. Let's try to understand the purpose of a chatzi shekel. Why are you giving a half shekels? Everybody says, ka'achtus. You should feel like you're connected with somebody else. You should know there are 600,000 people in Klal Yisrael, 600,000 neshamos. There are 300,000 letters in the Torah. Because each person connects with somebody else in order to have a letter in the Torah. So you have a connection with somebody. There's somebody who's like your best friend. You got to hang out with. And you and your friend share a letter in the Torah. Nowadays it's not like that. We have more people. And each person, it could be seven or eight people for every letter in the Torah. It could be there are seven or eight people for everything. Well, we don't understand that so much. But that's the answer that people usually give. Ah, you're all connected to one another. And that's a great achdus board. And people usually sing together. They put their arms around one another. And everything's all good. It's from the Belzer Rebbe. It's an unbelievable answer. But the Ramban takes it a step further, and we're going to take it into a little step further than that. Here we go. The Ramban said, all kings make their own coin. They forge their own coin with whatever they want on it. Usually, they put their faces on it. But we know as Jews, you can't have faces on coins. That would be a avodah zarah. If the face is sticking out from a coin, it's bullied from the coin, that's a avodah zarah. And we don't have those types of coins. That's why some people, you will notice, in Eretz Yisrael, do not use certain 5-shekel or 10-shekel pieces. Because they will not use a coin that has a face on it. That's why some of the coins in Eretz Yisrael are done differently. There's two different types of 10-shekel coins, of 5-shekel coins, I'm sorry. There's some that have lines down the middle, and other ones have the face itself. Because there are people who won't use it because you're not allowed to have a sticking out face from a coin. By a 1-shekel piece, it's fine because it's 1 shekel. 2-shekel piece, it's fine. I don't know what the 2-shekel piece looks like. I don't remember. But I don't know. But the 5-shekel is a little bit of a problem. And it gets out there. The 10-shekel piece with that little palm tree, the arkashas, some people use them, some people don't, whatever it is. But they, some people just make them into cufflinks. They're all there. What?
They have a 2-shekel piece?
Yeah, they now have a 2-shekel piece.
Oh, it's just brand new.
Two and a half years ago. They bought it all out. So they all made it. This coin had a certain weight, therefore it was called a shekel is in the word mishkal is in weight. It also was called, it was called the Shekel HaKodesh because it was used for holy purposes. It was used for Kodesh, it was used for Pidyon, it was used for those types of things. You gotta hear this. There is a Medrash. The Medrash says, Moshe Rabbeinu didn't, he was niskasha. He couldn't figure out what in the world is Pshat Yana Maksis HaShekel. What does it look like? He couldn't figure out what it looked like. And HaKodesh Baruch Hu pulled out from underneath the Kisei HaKavod, a shekel made of a matbea shalish, a coin made of fire, and he showed it to Moshe Rabbeinu, and Moshe Rabbeinu had all his questions answered. All his questions answered. Okay. A lot of questions over here. A lot of questions. Number one, what was it doing there? He's just like pulling out, oh, I happen to have one right here. what in the world, under the Kisei HaKavod, that's one of the strangest things I've ever heard. What in the world are we trying to do with a coin under the Kisei HaKavod? What was Hashem trying to hint to?
Give me a cycle.
Seriously, like, I got it in my wallet, I have it in my pocket, I got one right here, here you go. And what was so hard to understand about a Chatzi Shekel? If you go up to a person and you say, like, can you get me a Chatzi Shekel? Like, no, what's that? It's half a coin. I mean, I understand, especially the shekel is a weight. So a Chatzi Shekel is half that weight. I mean, it's something that's so obvious. What is he so niskasha? And he's sitting there like, I can't figure it out. Like, what in the world is this Chatzi Shekel? What are we doing over here? It's such a big kasha, and then it's made of fire? It's made of fire? You couldn't get a regular shekel? When Moshe Rabbeinu saw it, he's like, oh, it's made of fire. Like, what did that help? It doesn't help him in the long run because he can't figure out what's going on here. There's another line. The Gemara says you have to worry. Shemelo Yimsren Yafa Yafa. We're afraid that when you give the Chatzi Shekel to the Beis HaMikdash, you got to make sure you cannot give the Chatzi Shekel and say, I'm using this for a korban, and give it directly to the hands of the gizbar, the guy who's in charge of the money. Because we're afraid you might have wanted your shame on it, so the gizbar can go around to people and say, oh, it's these Zimmerman just donated part of this korban tummy. So you got to give it directly to the people. You got to put it in a box. You can't have any name on your coin. You can't really, Tzvi won't give this coin or anything like that. It has to be put inside a box, and then they take all the shekels, all the chatzi shekels, they put it together and they buy animals with it and they give it to the korban tummy. They give it for the korban tummy. I don't understand. If it's Kodesh, it's Kodesh. It no longer belongs to you no matter how many times I write my name on it. If I put my name on a dollar, then I give it to Jewel. I can't go back to Jewel and say, like, oh, it's got my name on it. It doesn't make a difference that your name is on the coin. If you spend the coin for something, it's gone. So what are we worried about? What are we worried about all of a sudden? Who cares what you think? Who cares that you're thinking, oh, I want it to be mine. I want it to be in my name. Who cares what you think if you gave it anyway? It's a beautiful word. Reb Shor starts it off. The Shemi Shmuel ends it. It is an unbelievably beautiful word. Unbelievably beautiful word. He says the following. By the coin, this coin that you're donating, the Iker is the Dvar and Shevalev, what's going on in your heart. Moshe couldn't understand why they're only giving a machatzitz shekel. Why not give a shekel kodesh? Why not give a full shekel? What's the point behind the half? Because in our world, in Olam Hazeh, you can't always do what you want to do. Your desires and your inner, what your wants and your rut zone, maybe I want to do everything that's good in this world. I want to be the greatest person ever. I want to daven for 6 hours. I want to learn all day long. I want to do all the best things out there. I don't want to do anything bad. But you can't. Because you're living in this world and you're living in a Gashmi world. Your rut zone is battle to the outer world, to the world at large. And your rut zone just can't do it. You have to want. You have to have that desire. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu understands means that you can't always do what you want to do. You can't always say what you mean to say. Because sometimes we mess up. The Matbea Shalesh, you know what the Matbea Shalesh stood for? The coin made of fire? It was the fire inside a person. Where did it come from? From Shamayim. From under the Kisei HaKavod. I know what your desires are. Your Ratzon is to be underneath my Kisei HaKavod, says the Kaddish Baruch Hu. The Matbea Shalesh, you want to give a full coin, a full shekel of fire. You want to use all of your desires and everything you do. I know what you want, the Kaddish Baruch Hu said. Nasa v'nishma b'nei Yisrael cried out loud. We want to do it. We want to hear it. We want to do everything, God. We want to be with you no matter what. We don't care what's going to happen. But at the end of the day, there's still an Egel Azov. There's still an Egel Azov. There's still something out there that drives you to do something wrong. That's the Matbea Shalesh. Says God, I understand. I understand, and I'm all with you. I understand that sometimes your burning desire to do good won't come out into your full meisim. You won't be able to do it. I know you want to give a shekel. Be satisfied with giving half. Be okay with doing what you can do and doing just half of what you want. Because sometimes you don't have a choice. Sometimes you can't get any further. What else are you going to do? That Eish is the Nasa v'Nishma. But the reality is the Egel Azov. The reality is the fact that we have to make an Egel Azov because our desires get in our way. Things get in our way. And we just start, we do stupid things. We do stupid things.
What's the point?
The desire.
No, but what's the point of this? Like, your desire is to do good. You're not going to do good. You can't
yeah.
be happy with that.
No. Don't be happy with where you are and just settle. Keep driving and striving, but don't get upset when you don't make it. Don't get upset and have yeush and give up on yourself when you say to yourself, I just can't do this. Because you know what? Davening a Shemona Esrei for 10 minutes, just for 10 minutes, is really, really hard. Let alone for an hour. To sit there and learn and not bottle at all, to not stop and have some Bittul Torah is almost impossible. To pay attention entirely during a 45-minute shiur is not the easiest thing in the world to do, and everybody understands that. Everybody understands that you can't sit there and pay attention for 45 minutes. You gotta get up, you gotta walk around, you gotta have a chill, you gotta have something else. That's understood. The ikkar is what you want to do. Do you want to do it? Do you want it? Then good. You can improve on that. You might not be able to do it now, but you can go further than that. You can bring yourself a little bit further. Says the Shem Yishmol, the word kesef does not only mean silver. It also means the word desire. To really desire something. When a person gives a coin and gives it over to the Beis HaMikdash, or gives it to Tzedakah, or does something right with the coin, there comes a desire within him to do the right thing for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The fiery coin represents your passion, the amount that you want to do in this world, the reality, and to be under the Kisei HaKavod. But when you cool down from that passion, and that heat isn't there, then you start to sin. That's when you start to do something wrong. You can't just come back after that and decide, okay, now I'm going to do mitzvahs. You got to come back with a fire, with a bren, with a passion. I want to do this now. I want to fight. I want to go out and do it. A lackadaisical attitude is not going to work if you want to bring yourself back, if you already cooled yourself down. You have to say to yourself, I'm in it. I'm in it. I want to do it now. Amalek's koach is asher korcha baderech. They cooled you down. They cooled you down. So what do you have to do after that? You got to give the chatzi shekel. You got to bring your fire, your desire back up. You got to show that there's a matbea shalish inside you. And the tikkun is to warm up that fire. And to say to myself, I know what I have to do. Not allow me to cool myself off again. I'm not going to allow myself to cool down. And if it does happen again, then I'll fire myself back up again. I'll say to myself, okay, I had a bad week. It's okay. I can build myself back up. And use a Shabbos. Use a davening. Use anything you have to be able to build yourself back up and say, I want, I desire, I have kesef. And bring yourself back. That's why Haman gave 10,000 shekle kodesh. Those 10,000 shekle kodesh, the kikar kesef that he gave, was mevatel, was baffled by Bnei Yisrael giving the chatzi shekel. Because Bnei Yisrael giving the chatzi shekel shows they will always have the desire. The desire is inside, but they'll always have that desire. So even if Haman comes along and cools them off with the Su'udah of Achashverosh and all the parties that are going on and cools off their passion and they don't want to do it, you can always build it right back up. Just fast for 3 days straight. do what Mordecai tells you to do. You can build it back up, and you can become more potent and more inspired and be able to do something you were never able to do before. It can happen again and again and again. So very quickly, a summary. We mentioned the Tzira, the hornet. We mentioned two opinions. Rashi says the one that blinded them. He doesn't mention the one about castration. That's another thing altogether. Why the Tzira didn't go to Eretz Yisrael? Because Yeshua didn't want it. He wanted to work on his own. That was Aaron's answer before. The point of a hornet is supposed to clear the path, and how to create it through your own Yetzer Hara. The tzaddikim do that by making their Yetzer Hara into something for real. The purpose of the Chatzi Shekel, to always have that desire that doesn't manifest itself sometimes, doesn't show itself in this world, but to have that desire that's latent within you, and to warm yourself up after cooling down, because no matter what, you always have a chance of coming back. That's it, guys. We'll stop with that. Have a good Shabbos.
Can you explain